So I'm actually always very interested in neutrino physics. And in fact, my first graduate student paper was on neutrino physics. But today I will talk about the neutrino mass and the structure formation. It's more like a journal club talk because I haven't read any paper on this. But so last week, Gary talked about the constraining neutrino, the number of neutrinos from BBN and CMB. Actually, from cosmology, you could not only constrain the number of neutrinos, you can also constrain their mass. So this is, so there are different, when people talking about astrophysics or cosmological constraint on neutrino properties, they have a different, sometimes they're talking about different things. But here I will talk about molar constraint coming from a structure formation. So so let me begin with the basics of structure formation. So we know that the galaxies we saw today grow out of small perturbations in the early universe. And the density perturbation, if you define it this way, where rho is the density at a certain point, then you can define this delta. Now this delta satisfies this, basically satisfies this equation. So it grows with time, where this t here is the conformal time. But anyway, so small delta will grow to greater ones. Now you can define the power spectrum for the fluctuations, defined this way. So people can measure the power spectrum today. So usually this p refers to today's power spectrum, but this initial perturbations came from, for example, inflation or other early universe physics. So you can write it in this form where p of k, the power spectrum, is a transfer function times p star of k, where p star is the primordial power spectrum. This transfer function t squared can be calculated from physics. Yes, I'm sorry, yeah, should be that. So this is a Fourier modes for the original delta. So here is a recent compilation by Tegmark and Zadariaga on the current power spectrum as of today. So there are, as you can see, this different points, data points, come from different way of measurement. The sum on the large scale come from the cosmic microwave background anisotropy. Now, actually, what they measured in the CMB anisotropy was that the fluctuations at earlier time when at the recombination. But once it's measured, you can then infer it today, which would be in this range. Now, this green points are the 2DF data, 2DF galaxy data for large-scale structure. So as you can see, this K here is the wave number measured in H over megaparsec. So H here is the reduced Hubble constant. So Hubble constant would be, for example, 70 kilometers per second per megaparsec. So that's written as 100 H. So this H would be 0.7 in that case. So then you also have the cluster abundance data and the weak lensing data and Lyman-Alpha forest data here. So this span a different scales. Now, why do we expect to see this power spectrum like this? The reason is that the primordial power spectrum as created after inflation would be like this when the modes enter the horizon. But then afterwards, if the, well, let me first, okay. So inflation creates a power spectrum, which is like this, P proportional to k to the n, where n is a number around 1. Now you can also define the normalization, where this normalization delta h can be measured from, for example, the CMB. Now the transfer function is essentially 1 if the k is very small, enters horizon during the before the equality of radiation and matter. Now, so in the early universe, the universe was dominated by radiation and expands fast, and basically there's no growing of the mode. But afterwards, when it becomes matter dominated, so there is a growth. So this earlier, this smaller mode does not grow, so it basically compared with the larger wavelength modes, it's smaller. Surprise. So this equality, it comes at this number, which is about 7 times 4, 6, 10 to the minus 2 microparsecs, so a few hundred microparsecs scale. So once we can calculate this spectrum precisely enough, then we can compare it with the observation, and then from that we can infer the neutrino mass. So here is a, for example, a calculation of the transfer function given by Eisenstein Hu. So this transfer function, for the, in their case, they did a fit with some particular numbers, but you can also do it numerically, just brute force solving the Boltzmann equations using the CMB fast, and you would obtain this transfer function. There's this oscillation due to the acoustic oscillations. Now, what is the effect of neutrinos? Now, in the case of neutrino, what happens is that neutrinos decoupled from the rest of the matter, just at a few MeV scale, as Gary talked last time. And basically, it stays with their number at that time. So you can calculate their abundance today using this formula, omega nu h square equal to m nu total, where m nu total is sum of all neutrino mass. But this is assumed that you have a equal amount of neutrino and antineutrino. Now this 94 eV actually it's kind of depends on a little bit on the physical conditions. So some people get 91, some get 92, and so here at 94. But anyway, so what happens is that the neutrino, a hot dark matter, which means that when they when the radiation and matter density equals in the universe, these neutrinos are still relatively thick, so they could not their density perturbations in the neutrinos could not grow as the cold dark matter. So what happens is that they do not their fluctuation do not grow, so they compare with the cold dark matter, they are smaller. So this is a hot dark matter suppression. So this happens, so the scale, this corresponding to some particular scale, which is this given by this, depends on the m nu here. So as you can see, this happens at about 10 megaparsec. If, 100 megaparsec, if m nu is equal to 1 eV, but depends on m nu. So below this scale, what happens is that the power spectrum is surprised by this amount. So what happens is that the neutrino doesn't grow when you're counting them as dark matter. So this, so compared with no neutrino case, you would have this suppression in power spectrum, given by this formula here. Now, this is some rough argument, but you can calculate more precisely using the transfer function I just show in the last transparency.
What's the n?
Sorry?
Capital n?
The number of neutrinos, I think.
So assuming all neutrinos have the same?
Yes, yes. So here, for example, is one of the recent data from the 2DF survey published last year. So these are the data points. Now, the solid line, which is corresponding to no neutrino mass. Now, this dash curve, this dash point curve, is this omega nu equal to 0.05. So this corresponding to a neutrino mass of about 2 eV. Whereas you can see this smaller one corresponding to this very close to this one is corresponding to this omega mu equal to 0.01. So as you can see, this already gives a strong constraint on the neutrino mass.
This is just normalized to the small scale, normalized to this. Right?
Yes,
this
yes.
Yes,
large scale would be here. So they didn't try to normalize this to the
CMB,
right. Right.
And then extrapolated to their larger scale.
Right. So as you can see, the data comes they would also actually have data here, but they actually didn't use them. Because here, as I will talk later, it's become nonlinear scale. So you can use galaxy survey to obtain this power spectrum, as I have just shown in the last transparency. What you observe is, for example, the correlation functions between galaxies. Now, what we can calculate actually is the correlation function for the density perturbations. So there is a relation between density and the galaxy number. This is usually called the bias, which is the B here. Now, you, in the simplest example, you can just assume B is a constant, and then this would be a proportion. The density correlation would be proportional to the galaxy correlation. Now, in fact, you could also have some scale-dependent correlation there. Then this relation will become more complicated. However, so people have found that, in fact, this simple case would be produced a very good fit. There are some theoretical reasons. For example, Bob Sherrier and David Weinberg show that given this form and a number of plausible physical assumptions, the power spectrum of the galaxy is related to the density power spectrum like this, where C is a constant. It is a small number, so at sufficiently large scale, this would become not important. Also, other people have actually tried to search for this kind of scale-dependent bias in the power spectrum of the galaxies, and they haven't found any. Well, they found a consistent with a constant bias.
One?
Yes, one.
But when you say people simulation?
Well, there are different ways. For example, this one I show is just analytical calculation. Now, there are also other people who are trying to using some particular model of galaxy formation and then compare the luminosity with observed luminosity, and then they could also determine. And of course, there you can also measure, for example, three-point correlation functions, and that also have some non-trivial dependence on the bias, and you can also search for that. So this is one complication. Now, luckily, this doesn't make things too bad. Now, there's also this quasi-nonlinear correction. This happens when this delta square, which I defined earlier, which is proportional to the P, but is a dimensionless quantity. So this delta k squared is defined this way. So this is a dimensionless quantity. And when this becomes 1, the perturbation theory does not work any longer. So this happens at about k equal to 0.2 h megaparsec minus 1. What happens is that at scales smaller than this, the density perturbations become nonlinear. They are very large, and they collapse into halos, and so on. And in this case, people try to use different way instead of using a perturbation calculation. If k is around this number, not too nonlinear, then people use this kind of Peacock and Dodds correction. So basically, this is empirically found relationship. So they do some simulations, and what they found is that given a linear power spectrum, you could infer the nonlinear power spectrum in this regime if you apply a number of mathematical corrections like this. And this B, beta, R, A, alpha, and V are all given in numerical numbers from an n-body simulation.
So that's Barakov alpha beta.
Sorry?
That's Barakov alpha beta.
Which one? Yes, yes. Yes. So anyway, if it's even more nonlinear when things happen to collapse into halos, then there is a Price-Schachter formalism, which also can describe that. I will talk about later. But anyway, so most simple case would be just using the linear power spectrum. But this is necessary if you want to include small scale data.
Do those equations assume a particular kind of dark matter?
Yes, this basically, but this kind of just empirical relation. You have some model which is already fits the data pretty well, and then you around that model, you kind of doing feed by running a few numerical simulations, and then compare with this formula. It doesn't depend on the particular nature of the, for example, neutralino would be the same as some other called dark matter model, but it doesn't care about that. But it have to be within a certain parameter range.
It wasn't with any neutrino component.
With this one?
Yeah.
This doesn't include neutrino, but however, neutrino doesn't affect this very much because neutrino doesn't cluster at this scale. So this just try to help you to detect the original linear power spectrum.
But for example, if the dark matter particles were self-interacting,
that would completely change everything. So this wouldn't apply to those cases. But however, one should point out that cold dark matter, at this scales, at this scales, probably the self-interacting of the dark matter doesn't matter very much, because here you have only pure gravitational evolution.
So there's no pressure in the ordinary.
Right. So here, for example, is the constraint on neutrino mass derived from this 2DF data. These are the probability distribution of F nu. I'm sorry, this is too small, but this F nu is basically omega nu, which is the abundance of the neutrino, relative abundance of the neutrino, divided by omega m, which is the cold dark matter. So suppose, for example, cold dark matter is 0.3, then, and let's say omega nu is 0.01, this F would be 1 over 30. So this basically now shows that this F nu is 0.15. You mean this one?
Yeah.
This is just the probability. They haven't normalized it to 1. But this is, so supposedly when you integrate everything out, you get 1. So this is the constraint on neutrino mass derived from this data. As you can see, there are some, well, there are two figures. These are just some different priors. So I think in this case, they assume that the omega matter is between 0.1 and 0.5, because if omega matter is too large, then there's trouble with other aspects of cosmology. But this one, they don't assume anything, but just feed all the data. Now, this is a large-scale structure data, but they also use the number of parameters which they derive from, for example, CMB and supernova data. So basically, this is the result. It depends somewhat on the initial power spectrum N, which runs from 0.9 to 1.1. Usually, people talk about equal to 1, which is the prediction of scale invariant power spectrum. Then the constraint on the total mass of neutrino is 1.8. This is just basically M1 plus M2 plus M3. It's 1.8 EV, 95% confidence level. Now this one have some slight difference, but essentially get about the same numbers. Now if N is 0.9, then it's slightly better and so on. But sorry, which yes. Well, yeah. You can see that this counter curve is like this. So naively, best fit would be something like here. But you see that you cannot determine. But of course, they also didn't consider any possibility that neutrino mass is negative. So then Well, this doesn't matter. This is just sum of all neutrinos.
This is total mass.
Yeah, total mass. So if you have three neutrinos, then well, and let's say that they have equal mass, then you divide this number by three. Actually, as you will see in the next transparency, everyone uses a different number when they talk about. Some people talk individual mass of neutrinos, but that's actually just come from dividing this number by three. Well, so you have several equations. So you have three delta m squared. Four delta m squared and one this. So you have five equations. But the problem is that let's say that delta m squared is very small, whereas this. Right.
How good can this get?
How good what?
How good can it get?
I will talk about. Okay, so now CMB. Now CMB case is slightly more complicated because I should have included CMB data, but I'm sure you have all seen this, those acoustic peaks. Those are plotted in the angular L. Now here, what I do is showing in terms of k. So each of the L modes, for example, the L equal to 2 modes, corresponding to a number of k here. So actually, so this will show, given a multiple L, there is a correspondence in k here. So there is some relation. So then you can calculate this. So the CMB CL is given by this integral, this convolution of primordial of this. I'm sorry, this PK divided by T square K. So this divided by this would give you the primordial power spectrum times this WL. So what plotted here is this basically WL times probably a factor of K or something, but anyway. So this gives you how you translate CL to the power spectrum.
And whether all these blue, yellow?
Oh, those are just different L number. Right. So L equal to 2, for example, the quadrupole would mostly corresponding to sample this K region, where L about 1,000 samples this region.
Right.
This is not the data. This is not the data. Yeah. So the neutrino does change the CMB spectrum a little bit. So this is taken from Hanistad paper showing a difference. So this is the relative change in CL, not CL themselves. CL itself is much larger than this. This red band is what they call the cosmic variance. Basically, you have only one sky to observe, so there's so much statistical fluctuation that limits this. Now, this blue and green curve are the change due to the neutrino mass of 0.07 eV, which is where you can see there are some small change. So here comes the constraint from a projected map and the Planck data. So we don't know, well, map is going to be released very soon, but Planck, this is just projection, but anyway. So these are basically counters. Now the color coding here is logarithm of the sigma of m mu. So anyway, so this most, the blackest, the darkest point would be minus, would be a sigma of Han, 0.01 eV. So as you can see the counters here, basically shows the limit on this. Now this actually used a hypothetical large scale survey. Now why is hypothetical? So we have 2DF and SDSS running, but this will not, this paper discussed the future. So the hypothetical survey is better than both of these in that they essentially would sample most of the volume of the universe. Whether it could be done or not, that's still an open question. So anyway, so given, so there are current limits which you can get by combining CMB and the dark matter. And the galaxy surveys. The reason that CMB itself doesn't work too well in this case because CMB mostly probe the large scale structure, where in the large scale the things haven't become the neutrino haven't affected very much yet. So that's the problem with CMB. So here is a combination of recent some of the recent limits. So this one, mu less than 4.2 eV is from this compilation of Xiaomin Wang, Mark Tengmark, and Matthias Zadariga, 2001. Hanistad last year wrote a paper which gives a constraint also on the total of neutrino mass. So this depends on what kind of prior you use. So you use CMB plus large scale structure, or CMB plus large scale structure plus BBN plus H0, or even supernova data. So when everything is used, for example, in this case, you get a constraint of 2.47 and 95% level for the total mass of neutrinos.
But is that used this survey that we mentioned before, the large scale?
Yes,
survey?
This used the 2DF. Yes, so actually these two papers just published about the same time, and the 2DF, the number they set it, the 2DF team set it, actually a little bit better than this.
Yeah,
they're actually a little bit better than this. Right.
The dominant data really is the large scale survey. the most critical.
Which one?
The large scale survey.
Yes, yes, yes.
The most critical.
Right. So this is 2DF data. So the SDSS data haven't been published for this purpose.
So what aspect, would you tell us what aspect of the quantum map data is particularly sensitive?
So what actually they wouldn't help very much in this, but what they do is that they constrain the other parameters better. So essentially, so you have like depends on, well, you have at least 6 parameters, and some people talk about 9 or 11 parameters. Now what happens is that with the Planck data, you can constrain the other things much better than this. Now there's also a little bit of contribution for the neutrinos, as I have shown in this particular, I'm sorry, in this one.
Now what was it? Can you tell me what that says? That says where in the map, what aspect of the map in Planck data is sensitive?
This basically, I should explain this. So for example, suppose you have 0.07 UV neutrino. This is plotted here. Now this color coding shows the chi-squared, shows the confidence level you measured. So here, you basically at one, this would corresponding to one sigma detection. I'm sorry. Yeah. For a 0.07 EV. Yeah.
And what versus what's that lambda and the k?
That's just the 1/k. Yes, that's right. Yeah. So there is also analysis of data produced by Anthony Lewis and Sarah Brito. So what they get is slightly better than they actually use essentially the same data set. Maybe additionally they have used some more CMB data set, but basically the same. But what they get is a little bit better than that. Now the number they caught is a third of the total mass. So basically they assume an equal mass of the neutrinos. So what they get at 95% level, which is the numbers I caught earlier, that's 0.54 for each individual neutrino, that corresponding to when you sum them up, you get 1.6 EV for the total neutrino. A little bit better than the other two, but at the same level. Sorry? Well, the Pygmark analysis is the earlier data. This one is the 2001 data. Sorry? I forget whether whether they have included the 2DF or not. Probably not. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, the question might be, why is it that Anastad, who has most of the current data, finds like 2.5?
Yes.
And I think, if I recall from Anastad's paper,
yes,
the real point is this issue of priors. All the mm-hmm. other cosmological parameters that you put in,
right,
the result is often sensitive to them. And that's why you do so much better
with the CMB,
with first map and then with Planck.
Right. But actually, it's still a little bit surprising to me that there is so large a difference between his analysis and this 1.6 EV from Lewis and Brito. Because their data doesn't differ so much at all. So.
Very precise.
So besides this, besides this CMB and large-scale structure data, I will just briefly mention some other constraints, which are also using structure formation, but kind of more less certain. For example, this Lehman alpha forest. So this is a quote from Croft, Hu, and Dave, 99, mu less than 5.5 EV. Now, somewhat troubling here is that after they have popped, well, so the Lehman alpha probes the power spectrum at Z equal to 3, because that's where the Lehman alpha is produced. So people thought at that time that at this scales, the Lehman alpha is linear, so you don't need to do much correction. However, so this people, Matias Zadariga, Soshi Mario, and Lyman Hui, recently, well, not so recent, but 1 year ago, basically point out that actually nonlinear effect is already quite severe at that time for this scale. So then the thing become a little bit murky because you don't know exactly how it is. And actually, these nonlinear effects tend to make whatever power spectrum into some particular form with a certain power index. So there is an attractor somewhere in there. So it makes it less distinctive when it is used alone. Although if you have a combined other with other data, then it's less a problem.
But when probes are Lyman alpha forest, now, in larger Z, where it'd be less non-linear.
Well, the thing is that the reason that you measure it at Z equal to 3 is from observation. There are some wavelengths which happens to fall into the optical. Now, if you want to, yes, but then you have to use the infrared observation. Well, I mean, yes, but the thing is that so this could still be under debate, but I'm just saying that this is probably less certain than the case of the large scale structure. But this certainly, I'm not saying that this cannot be used. So you can also derive constraint from cluster of abundance. So here you have a highly nonlinear situation. You have a press detector derived the feed to the numerical simulation, n-body simulation. So the number of halos of given mass and the redshift would be dependent on this sigma, which is a smooth variance on some R. Now there are some formulas which translate, which gives you this, and then this sigma certainly depends on the pk here. And then, of course, when you actually observe, you can sometimes observe the dynamical mass, but you also sometimes just use X-ray data. Then there is also the relation between the mass and the temperature, again derived from some empirical relation. There are some data quoted here. So one recent analysis by these people, Akipova et al., found F nu is in the range of 0 to 0.2. As you remember, as you could recall, F nu is the ratio between the omega nu and the omega m. So what mass it gives depends on somewhat on the on the omega m. So taken, for example, omega m equal to 0.3, this would equal to omega nu equal to 0.06, which would corresponding to a 2 eV neutrino. This m nu here is given by Fukugita et al. Okay, 0.6 eV. Now,
is that the sum?
This I think is divided by 3. This is already I mean you have to multiply this by 3. I mean, yes, and even Actually, from these papers, I could not tell whether they are telling about a one sigma constraint or two sigma constraint. So we have to take it a little bit. But in any case, so the people have some more doubt on the press sector formalism on the nonlinear part, because there many things could get complicated. So there are also strong lensing constraint, which is more recent one, Dalao and Kashnak. These probes very small scales, so 50 HM. I'm sorry, this should be minus one there. So anyway, so they derive a neutrino constraint of 0.74 eV. This I think also on individual neutrino. So the idea here is that people observed some gravitationally lensed systems. You have several images, and the images, their brightness is different. Some bright, some less bright. So this lensing flux ratio basically depends on how the substructure is inside the lens system. Now you can modeling this, the substructure was produced by subhalos in this lens galaxies. So you can modeling that, which is also dependent on the press, on the power spectrum. So you could obtain some constraint on this. Actually, their main result was constraint on the warm dark matter, which are basically would be, for example, neutrino at the keV level. They basically rule out the warm dark matter models, but they also claim to, for example, rule out these numbers. However, again, here there are many questions whether they have done it correctly or not. So this is a one possible technique.
What did they use for sigma
8? I don't recall. I can find out later with the paper. So this one is a future possibility which haven't been done, but the people recently, last month actually, Kev Abdasin and Scott Dodson suggest this using weak lensing to detect neutrino. So this basically idea is that you measure the equation of state. So suppose you measure using a very large scale weak lensing survey of 4,000 square degrees. And you also have the redshift on the along the all the field. Then what happens is that you can do a lensing tomography, and you could construct the growth factor, because the growth factor depends on the equation of state. So you can construct the growth factor, reconstruct the growth factor from this. Then you can obtain the equation of state. So of course, people usually talk about quantensons or cosmological constant, which affect the equation of state. But actually, if you have neutrinos there, it also affects the equation of state, although the effect is slightly, is kind of small. But anyway, so they have this constraints here showing the projected precision at one sigma level. So here, this plot illustrates an ideal case. For example, you have a three this hierarchy of neutrinos. Well, this depends on somewhat on the. So the reason that this depends on the particular mass, not the total mass, is because the three different neutrinos, if have they have different mass, they redshift differently. So you have to given a specific mass scheme, mass hierarchy scheme. So given this particular one, so this is basically the three neutrino mass as a function of M1, where the lattice mass. So for example, then you can sum of them, then you get you can exclude this part where M1 is greater than 0.1. Now this of course seems basically. So as you can see that here, what happens is that you can rule out things more easily when the three things have equal mass. Now here, when you have a very different mass, then it's more difficult to get.
Say a little more about how the equation state enters in. I think of the equation state as being pressure versus.
Oh, I'm sorry. So P equal to W times I guess one min one plus W over. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, it doesn't interact with other things, but you can define the pressure as the momentum tensor, but energy momentum tensor. You integrate that, you get a effective pressure. Although it doesn't acting on anything, but it's just that. So again, this is a potential. No, just the effective potential. Basically, just the mass relation.
So, what's the current exclusion?
No, this is proposed, but they don't have data yet. So, supposedly, if you complete this huge survey in the future,
so
then this. Actually, probably even better than that. But.
The idea is that there's some correlation with W.
All of this constraint, this W here, now then you in addition to the quintessons or whatever other things there, you're adding this neutrino contribution. So anyway, so this is the just to take home the current constraints depends on who you ask. For individual mass, you get m nu between this range, and this future best constraint, Steen-Hannestad says for the possible best data possible from CMB and large scale structure would be this 0.07 eV.
Sort of the free screening scales for those masses?
Well, I don't remember, but I have the formula there. So it's about, 0.07 would be 1/10 of this. So you square root, you get 1/3 of this. So 0.08. Right. So something like 1 gigaparsec.
So on scales considerably bigger than, say, several kiloparsecs, the neutrinos aren't clustering. And therefore, things that measure on those scales aren't going to be terribly sensitive. We have pretty strict constraints already from what has been done, which suggests that the mass is less than an EV, or maybe even a little bit smaller.
Right.
Therefore, they don't cluster on sufficiently small scales.
Right.
I just wanted to know how big those small scales were, and they seem.
Well, I mean, if you have a smaller neutrino mass, it's clustered on larger scales. It's not smaller. The smaller scale.
I guess what I was actually asking is, it's the old Germain and Gunn argument that the neutrinos can't. Once systems are going nonlinear. The neutrinos won't be able, if their mass is light, they won't be able to cluster on that scale. And I think that scale probably turns out to be of order cluster masses. And therefore, anything that measures smaller structure shouldn't be terribly sensitive to neutrinos except as a background, not as a contribution to the
right.
Structure.
Right. I mean, it depends on the mass of the neutrino. And if you have a larger mass neutrino, as people think about hard dark matter, then at that time, it's mostly cluster scale. But this people talking about here are much larger scales. It's, it doesn't certainly doesn't cluster on the cluster scale. Well, other questions? Sorry, what do you say? The lensing, the lensing
constant?
Yes. Yes, 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 that's, no, that's from the lensing. So here, this lensing, they are talking about the structure inside the galaxies. So this, there are these dark matter halos. They are produced during during the structure formation, and they stay there just inside the galaxies. And if this galaxy serves as a lens, now you observe several images. Now, if you have a very smooth distribution of dark matter inside the halo, you will have just some very symmetric lens. Well, not very symmetric, but you have some difference. But basically, the flux will be comparable to each other. So you have two images equally bright. Now, what people do is that they observe this. I don't remember how many, but maybe a dozen lens systems with more than one image. Then, so some of the images are more dim than others. So this, from this, you can infer how much scale structure, how much structure must be inside those galaxies, galaxy halos, and those corresponding to some k here. Now, I have shown that there is a relation between the mass and the k. So if you have warm dark matter at this kV scale, what happens is that it erases these small small halos. So actually, so several years ago, there was about a few years ago, there was a small halo, small scale structure problem. So people don't detect enough satellite galaxies near the Milky Way. So then people invoked this warm dark matter to erase this these halos. That's why there are this plethora of warm dark matter and self-interacting dark matter basically erase these things. Now, what these people arguing last year was that since you have already detected this lens system, indicate that these halos, even though you can't see them, they must be there. Just their gas was somehow dispersed by some gas physics, and doesn't form star, and you can see it.
But I thought there was a fundamental problem with this, that there is no way to prove that the clumps are in the galaxy that you are looking at, not some projective structure along the line of
sight. Yes, that's one possibility. I mean, but you can calculate given the cosmology how much possibility is there along the line of sight. What is the structure there? It's very small, though.
Well, but I mean, this is not my take. This is the take from many people who work on this. This result, since you do lensing, or you do it, you do projected temperature, and then there is
the complicated business of how filaments can be only younger than. But filaments doesn't affect this very much, though. Their mass is too, the real density is very small, though.
But the point is, you don't know whether the top clumps are in the galaxy.
Well, I mean, there are, I agree with you that there are certain certain uncertainties which systematic effects you couldn't just calculate from this. But then you can kind of observe, for example, you can observe in average how much large-scale structure halos, how much along a random site, how much structure is there. And presumably, this do not correlate with the structure inside the halo. And so given enough number of systems, this possibility could be ruled, of course, for a small number of them. There's always possibility of chance that you have some structure along the line of sight.
Yeah, followed up by more recent papers in the
Well, there actually there are several papers which criticize the these people after this is published. Niu Dalao told me that they are writing a reply which rejecting all of this this criticisms. So I didn't do anything of this, so I don't know whether either of them are valid or not. But so.
Thank you.